Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special Locked Over NFL Network crossover event. Look, Wednesdays on the Locked Over cross on the Locked Over NFL channels, it's always the crossover stuff, and there's going to be some great shows going on. But there's only one show that's going to be previewing perhaps the game of the week, perhaps the game of the year in the AFC. And that's the game, the AFC Championship rematch between the New England Patriots traveling to Jacksonville to what I anticipate will be an out-of-its-mind Duval. So here with you, Mark Schofield from Locked On Patriots and Christopher Thornton from Locked On Jaguars to help get you Patriots, Jaguars, NFL fans ready for this game. Christopher, welcome on into the show. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fantastic. Can't complain. Got to see a sloppy but a victorious Jaguars in New York this past week. And then, like you said, an AFC Championship rematch this Sunday, which, like you said, Duval will be rocking.
Yeah, and I want to get to that in a second, and we can get to the on-the-field stuff as well. And obviously, people are wanting to hear that stuff. But we were talking before we started recording about that AFC Championship game, and most specifically, the John Malkovich teaser that they did for CBS and just how fantastic that was and whether they could possibly top that or if CBS would even try. I mean, wasn't that just like the greatest like 3 minutes to get you ready for a football game that you've seen in a long time?
It was perfection. I mean, especially from the Jaguars' perspective, because I guess in that commercial, the Patriots are kind of painted as the bad guys, the Goliaths,
yeah.
But the Jacksonville fan base absolutely loved that commercial because it was fantastic. Just really just, I mean, for both sides, just kind of really just energized you, got you ready for that game. And I just felt like, I feel like most Jags fans, after they watched that video, were able to just kind of run through a brick wall in anticipation for that game.
Yeah, I more than understand that. Before we dive into the matchup, let's remind everybody where you can find us and our work. Mark Schofield here. Best way to find me is on Twitter at Mark Schofield. You can check out the work at places like InsideThePylon.com, Pro Football Weekly, The Score, Big Blue View Nation, part of the SB Nation Network. You can follow Christopher on Twitter. He is at Misto Christofo, MistoChristopho, as well as LockedOnJaguars.com. He and his usual running mate, Zach Goodall, do a tremendous, tremendous job over Locked On Jaguars. You should definitely check out the work they do. If you're a Jaguars fan, if you're a Patriots fan, if you're just a football fan, check out the work they do. So, Chris, let's dive into it, and I guess we can kind of start again, away from the field for a second, because you mentioned Duval, and I have to imagine that Jaguars fans, people close to the team, people on this team have had this date circled on the calendar for a while.
Yeah, I mean, when the schedule came out and we saw that our home opener was going to be against the Patriots, you could imagine the feeling that Jags fans saw, because, I mean, let's be honest, Jags fans were left with that sour taste in their mouths so close, 7 minutes from the Super Bowl, and then they kind of just let it out of their grasp. And then, of course, a whole offseason of Miles Jack wasn't down. Miles Jack eventually embracing it, the team running with it. So that'll definitely be you will see a lot of that leading up to this game for the rest of the week. But, especially with it, we're kind of blessed because here in September in Jacksonville, it's hot. So this matchup being at 4:30 is gonna help in the stands, definitely, but more certainly it's just gonna be a whole day of anticipation for that game. It's gonna be rocking. TIA Bank Field, or known as the Bank, is gonna be electric. Probably be the most electric since the Bills playoff game, since it was the Jags' first playoff game in 10 years. So definitely looking forward to that.
And you know, you mentioned the Miles Jack wasn't down, and I think, you know, in the summer, you know, you guys are hosting Locked On Jags, I'm hosting Locked On Pats, there's often not a lot to talk about. You can see a thing pop up on Twitter or something that's really interesting. And then as you get closer to the season, it's kind of the same way, but you get more storylines. When I saw a grocery store down in Jacksonville, and I don't know what grocery store chain it was, but they had one of those soda displays where they set up all the cases of soda and it spells out Miles Jack wasn't down. I think that's when it really got through my thick skull at, man, you guys are not going to let that one go, are you?
Yeah, I like to say that this was our equivalent of Dez didn't catch it or Dez caught
right.
It.
Yeah,
that's probably the closest thing that we have. Jaguars, I mean, when you lose, you got to cling to something, or you always want to pin it on something, and that was definitely the most prominent for Jags fans. I think we wouldn't have really had that big of a problem if it hadn't happened several times in the season before. There was a few occasions where guys were just ruled down early, where it could have been touchdowns. Like one was to Sean Gibson in the Los Angeles Chargers game, where he got a fumble recovery return for a touchdown, but the refs blew it early. So that, I think that was one thing that kind of led to all this. Me personally, I was definitely a Miles Jack wasn't down guy early on, but then as it got on, I was like, all right, we can kind of let this thing die, and I know it's not going to die until after this week. So, but definitely something to kind of just give Jaguars fans, I guess, just keep themselves motivated, kind of that fuel for revenge.
Well, I mean, you know, coming from a Patriots perspective, believe me, they don't go away. I mean, we still hear Raiders fans in the tuck rule, and mm-hmm. so probably, you know, regardless of how Jacksonville fares from here on out, you guys might be bringing that up, you know, as, you know, the years roll by. But let's get into the matchup. I kind of want to start when Jacksonville has the football. Ed, you know, I'm sure you do a lot of shows and a lot of podcasts and radio hits with other people, and I'm sure the question you get asked most is, where do Jacksonville fans stand on Blake Bortles? How do they feel about Blake Bortles? You know, we had some moments last week against the Giants, a game you were attended in person. So where do Jaguars fans stand on Blake Bortles right now?
For me personally on Twitter, a lot, it's almost, I want to say 75-25 in support. Blake gets a lot more love here in the home market than he definitely does on the national media. I can dive into that in a little bit. But Blake, I feel like if you haven't lived in Jacksonville, there's kind of just a really interesting or unique dynamic of Jacksonville. And kind of Blake is kind of fits all the boxes of being Duval, per se. He just kind of represents himself in the city. And just everybody wants Blake to be the guy because they like the guy Blake so much. Things that he does in the community, just kind of how laid back and stuff he is. But for his play, I think people are kind of still skeptical. But last December, I think, really kind of showed people that he could be the guy. Starting that December month off against the Seahawks and the Colts, and just having those really strong performances showing, hey, I can do it. Then this past offseason, gets his wrist surgery, kind of finally fixes that thing up that he's had a problem with for 2 years. But for the most part, I would say Jaguars fans are supportive of Blake Bortles. Obviously, when things get tough, people are going to want a point for change. But all in all, I would say that Blake probably has a decent support from fans here in Jacksonville compared to kind of the view of the national media from the ad.
You know, speaking of support, you know, you kind of look at this Jacksonville offense, and you look at, you know, some of the additions and then some of the guys that aren't there. I mean, Marquise Lee was, I thought, a guy that was going to be a big target for Blake Bortles. Obviously, he has the season-ending injury. So you look at, you know, Keelan Cole, Dante Moncrief, DJ Chark. You know, how is this offense built to win games? Is it the run game and the defense, or have they put weapons around Blake Bortles where they can make some plays in the passing game so they don't have to win like they did, say, last year or before that?
I think the core philosophy is still going to be playing nasty on defense and just kind of running the ball as much as you can. But they did give Blake a lot of weapons. They definitely bolstered that offense. And honestly, I don't think a lot of Jags fans here know how the offense is going to go, because last week, I don't think last week was kind of a proper showing of what the offense could do because the conditions were bad. It's raining. Most quarterbacks are going to have somewhat struggle on the football if it's wet. So last week kind of I don't think was a real showing. I think this week is going to be a much better test to show kind of if the Jaguars offense has taken the next step, because it's supposed to be clear skies. It's supposed to be nice and hot in Jacksonville, and I think that's going to be a big thing. But I think they kind of went with the mentality of not necessarily having a number one receiver, but instead having a lot of good twos, to where you're not going to have that one guy. Maybe that one guy will emerge, because that's kind of what they're hoping for in DJ Chark. But as of right now, you have a bunch of really good guys across the field to where, hey, maybe you can't double team this receiver. Everybody's kind of have to get the same attention, and then you just go from there. So it'll be interesting to see as the season goes on, because the emergence of Keelan Cole last year was surprising nonetheless. He was an undrafted free agent, flashed in camp, made the roster, and then kind of was below the line for most of the season and then really emerged towards the end. So I think that's running the ball is definitely going to be their number one thing. That's always what they're going to be known for, pounding the rock, playing physical defense. But it will be nice to see if the passing game can kind of complement that.
I was going to ask you about DJ Chark because he's a guy that you and I both saw up close down at Mobile last year at the Senior Bowl who flashed at times down there. Jacksonville drafted him in the second round, receiver out of LSU. What have you guys seen from him? Maybe not, you know, in week one, given the conditions, but throughout training camp and the preseason slate of games. What have you guys seen from the rookie wide receiver?
Well, Chark has definitely been Zach's project for this offseason. Zach was charting almost all of his routes, almost everything that man was doing during camp. So if you really want to find that out, go to Zach's page. I'm sure you could name search Chark and find all of his stuff. But Chark has really grown because in college, he used to, Zach used the term alligator catch it a lot, or alligator arms, where he would really just try to catch it with a cradle. Whereas now in camp, you can see him finally using that nice length that God gave him and able to go out and get balls. So he's definitely growing. He's a young kid. He's definitely going to have to mature, and that's just what being a rookie is. But when he was drafted on draft night, there was a sound clip of Caldwell, I believe, to wide receiver coach Keenan McCardell, who, if you don't know, was a phenomenal receiver for the Jaguars back in the glory days of Jacksonville. But Caldwell says to Keenan McCardell, "We finally got your guy." So Keenan McCardell must have had Chark very high on his list. I think it came out that the Jags had a first round grade on Chark, so they coveted him really highly. And when he fell to them in the second round, it was almost like a gift in there. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Chark can progress through the season, because I think he only had like 17 offensive snaps last week. So as the season goes on, we'll probably see more of him. But he's kind of almost a blank, I can't think of the word, blank canvas right now. And we're just kind of waiting for it to see what shows up.
You know, you mentioned there, Chris, you know, that running the ball is still probably the core element of what the Jaguars do want to do on offense. And obviously the conversation there has to start with Leonard Fournette, who had a hamstring injury last week. You know, is he going to go? Or is this going to be a T.J. Yeldon game? And building off of that, it seemed at least, and I'm only, you know, through a couple of watches, I haven't really chartered out all the run game stuff Jacksonville did last week, but it seemed like the run game did sort of take on a different feel and flavor when it was Yeldon versus Fournette.
Yeah, Fournette, he said after the game that he'll be good to go this week, but Marone said this morning that they're definitely going to evaluate, see how he is. But I would say that there's a bigger chance than not that Fournette will play this week. Whether he's 100%, I'm not entirely sure, but it would really surprise me if he didn't, if he wasn't active this week. And then going to your second part with Yeldon, I mean, Yeldon was drafted in the second round, and he was supposed to be kind of what the Le'Veon Bells, the David Johnsons, the Alvin Kamaras of the league are now. Hasn't really panned out to that necessarily level of play. But that's what they like to use him for. They like to use him as that passing back, screen passes, stuff like that, to kind of open up the offense that way, passing slash running, whereas Fournette is that hard nose between the tackles, downhill runner that we all know that encourages hits. And but he got lighter this offseason, so he's a little more nimble, a little more agile, which is nice to see. But that's definitely the contrast in the two, Fournette being the power runner and Yeldon kind of being the pass-catching back.
Mark Schofield, Christopher Thornton doing a little crossover action here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Little Jags, little Patriots, AFC rematch. It's going to be your national game on CBS this Sunday afternoon. And Chris, let's sort of switch gears now. Talk about a little bit when the Patriots have the football and that matchup between Tom Brady and the New England offense against, you know, Jalen Ramsey, Miles Jack, and this Jacksonville defense. And I think the best place to start, obviously, is Jalen Ramsey, who has been such a fascinating player and talent and person to watch over the course of his young career. And obviously there's been a little bit of him talking about, you know, Rob Gronkowski. Talk a little bit about Jalen Ramsey, both the player and the person, and what he means to this Jacksonville defense and perhaps this Jacksonville team and even this Jacksonville region.
Oh yeah. Jalen has said it before, how cool it's been, how when he was drafted, I can't remember who he was talking to, but he said, "Let's change the culture of this team and let's change the culture of this city." And I think he really has done that. Jacksonville fans absolutely love Jalen Ramsey. And Jalen Ramsey is that guy to where if you're not a Jaguars fan, you probably don't like Jalen Ramsey, We all know last week or the week before, he came out with that GQ article basically listing off all the quarterbacks and what he thought about them. And that's just who Jalen is. Some people think that he's a diva, and maybe he is still a little bit. But I think, honestly, if you compare him to Deion Sanders in almost every way that you can compare them to, they're similar. They're just that diva on the field, off the field. They dress the same. But no, he is definitely he's definitely the face of this franchise, and it's so refreshing to have a guy like that on your team that the national media kind of, no matter what he does now, kind of points at him and kind of points it out to get that national media spotlight, because he is putting Duval, I guess, on the map a little more, and that's just really nice to finally have a superstar again in Jacksonville.
Can I just say for the record, Chris, and you know, you maybe you listen to the show, maybe you don't, maybe you listen to Locked On Pats, maybe you don't, but when his GQ article came out, I came on this show and basically told listeners that I loved it, but then it got me scared because it made me realize that as soon as he retires, Jalen Ramsey is going to take my job, you know, because my gig is evaluating quarterbacks, and he like nailed it. Like, I'm out there telling people now that next time I come out with quarterback tiers, I'm going to just use Jalen's rankings because I think they were pretty accurate. I mean, I think he nailed it.
I saw, I believe it was a Bleacher Report article where they're like evaluating the quarterback play from week one to Jalen Ramsey standards. And he was almost spot on in almost all of them.
And the only one that he kind of missed on was Flacco. But are we ready to buy in on Joe Flacco? That was against the Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, Jalen has a point just saying that Flacco isn't that great, because, I mean, we kind of saw what happened in London last year.
That's exactly right. Okay, let's talk about this defense a little bit, because, look, we all know what this defense is capable of. It was a historically good defense last year, historically good pass defense last year. You know, when you start up front, I think that's really where, you know, Jacksonville's talent on the defensive side sort of flows from. I mean, we could talk about Jack and Ramsey, of course, but I think the guys up front, Campbell and Jackson and, you know, some of the other guys, they get up front, they get after quarterbacks, and we saw that last week against Eli Manning. You got to think that's going to continue throughout the rest of the season, right?
Yeah, I mean, Saxonville isn't going away. Calais definitely was a force last week against Eric Flowers. I mean, the first play of the game, Flowers had to trip him to avoid a sack on Eli Manning. But one of the things people say is that front four is loaded. You have, and it's not even that it's top heavy, it's deep now, because you have Yannick Ngakoue on one end, you have Calais on the other, then you have Marcel Darius in the middle, Malik Jackson, who I think is probably one of the most underrated three techs in the league. And then behind them, you have rookie Taven Bryan, who a lot of people loved coming out, real raw prospect. You have Avery Jones, you have Dante Fowler on one side, you have Laurenti McCray on the other. It's just a loaded defensive line that just the guys love it, because they're constantly rotating out, and when they get back on the field, they're fresh again. And I think that's just terrifying, probably from another team's perspective, especially if like an O-line's not as strong. I know the Patriots lost Isaiah Wynn, which absolutely sucked, because I was really looking forward to seeing Wynn play. But as a Patriots fan, I'm sure it's probably concerning hearing stuff like that, oh, well, when Calais is on the field, who's going to be out there? And then realize that you got guys just behind him that are ready to go. Yeah, like you said, I don't think that defensive line's going away anytime soon, especially not this year.
Yeah, and what's amazing is looking at that Jacksonville front seven and the depth chart. You know, you've got Taven Bryan and you've got Dante Fowler, two guys that were first-round picks, and they're backups, you know, for this defensive line off the edge. And, you know, anytime you can have that sort of depth and the ability to rotate players in, like you said, Chris, where, you know, you're going to get, you know, unless the other team's going, you know, tempo and you don't get a chance to substitute, you're going to have fresh guys coming off the edge, and that's going to be a problem for a lot of teams. And, you know, you were there, you know, watching this defense up close last week, you know, against the Giants. You know, did you see something where it was just Flowers and a technique breakdown, or was this just these guys are just flat out better?
Well, there's the funny thing that came out this week where Eric Flowers said he misjudged Campbell and thought that Campbell was a speed guy, not a power guy. And I don't know how you misjudge that when Campbell's 6'8", 2, whatever, 100 pounds, and you think that he's a speed guy. So that was the one funny thing. I think Jags fans knew all offseason going into this that Ereck Flowers is definitely going to be the target on that line. But no, I mean, I've come out early and said that I think Yannick Ngakoue is going to have a 17-plus sack year this year. Didn't get any last week, but he was able to get continual pressures because the one thing that everybody knows Yannick for is that outside speed move where he usually gets a forced fumble. I mean, that's just what Yannick is known for. But then this offseason, he worked with Von Miller to kind of increase his pass rush repertoire and now has an inside move. So now he's kind of evolving his game, which I think is scary to think about because my closest comparison for Yannick Ngakoue is Danielle Hunter out in Minnesota. Both drafted in almost similar areas, play the same style, almost same age, and I think they'll eventually get paid the same. But I think they just dominate whoever's in front of them because they're so stacked across the line. It's just like watching Minnesota play. There's just so many playmakers on that defense that the corners are so good that wide receivers aren't getting open. Quarterbacks have to hold the ball, and then eventually just the pocket collapses. So I think it's technique, but I also think it's just all-around skill. These guys are just the best in the business at what they do.
You know, Chris, if you were to try to answer the question, if there's, you know, a weakness on this Jacksonville defense, what is it? What would you point to, the safeties? Would you look at maybe a Leon Jacobs, who's, you know, a rookie seventh rounder who's slotted in as your starting, you know, strong side backer, but you obviously are playing a lot of, you know, nickel and stuff, so he doesn't see the field a ton. Where could you answer that question? Or is it just, look, this is from top to bottom, as good a defense as you're going to find in the NFL?
If I had to say, I would say probably the safety position. And that's not even saying that it's a bad group. It's just that the other positions are so good that there has to be a weakness somewhere. And even then, they're not that bad. They're really good safeties. If I had to pick a part of the field that I think is the weakest, I think shallow middle of the field. I think that's where teams, if they can game plan well enough, can really pick apart the Jaguars. We saw Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers do it last year. We saw Tom Brady and the Patriots do it last year, where you just right before the first down marker, that's where there seems to be the biggest hole. And I hope the Jaguars are starting to realize this and can kind of game plan for it. But if I had to say a weakness, if I had to put my money on where you're going to find success as an opposing quarterback against this Jaguars defense, it would definitely be kind of 8 yards from the line of scrimmage towards the middle of the field, right near the first down marker.
You know, Chris, you know, you mentioned that, and we saw that last year in this AFC Championship game where New England was able to finally, in that second half, have some success, you know, attacking sort of the shallow to intermediate area of the field over the middle. We saw some Amendola stuff. We saw some Gronkowski stuff. Do you think that you might see a different approach from Jacksonville in this game than, say, last year? Because, you know, in this AFC Championship game, they played a lot of, you know, there was a lot of man. There was maybe some cover three and cover one stuff at times. You know, I feel like last week against New York, they did a lot more with two high safety looks. Obviously, you're worried about Odell. Nobody on New England's roster gives you that kind of fear, except maybe Gronkowski, but you don't have to go cover two for him. Do you think Jacksonville changes things up, or do we think they're going to run what they like to run, more man coverage stuff, and they're just going to hope to be better than they were in the second half of that game last year?
Well, the one thing that was really frustrating in that AFC Championship game was that the defense was having a lot of success against the Patriots offense in the first half, and that's because they were playing man. They're saying our guys can match up with your guys, and we're going to make you fight for what you got to get. Second half, the coaching staff got really conservative and started playing zone, and I think that's really what the demise of that second half for the Jags was. They took their foot off the gas in essence in defense and was like, all right, we'll start giving you cushions, that way we are reducing the risk of a big play, but instead we're going to let you nickel and dime the defense. And I think that was the biggest problem. I hope that the Jaguars stick to doing man because they have the personnel to be able to do it. Make Tom Brady beat you, make these receivers beat you if you want to get yards on this defense. Don't give them anything. And I think if the Jags can do that, then I think they could probably replicate success that they had in the first half of the AFC Championship game. And maybe if they do that in the second half, maybe this entire podcast is different. Maybe we're talking about the Super Bowl champion Jaguars or their first Super Bowl. So, but if I were me, I would say play more man and kind of stay away from zone.
Mark Schofield, Christopher Thornton doing a little Locked On Network Patriots-Jags crossover. And it's time to get to the nitty-gritty, my friend. And since you guys have home field advantage, I guess I will go first. And it's prediction time. And so, you know, when I look at this game, you know, when I sat down at the start of the season and sort of looked at the Patriots schedule and start coming up with a potential record and a win-loss record, I look at this game, and this is one of those games where I look at from New England's perspective and think, if they're going to lose a game, you know, here in the first 2 weeks, it's going to be this one. You know, you look at going down to Jacksonville, and as you've been talking about in this show, Chris, you know, obviously Duvall is going to be hyped and ready to go. It's going to be basically a sellout type situation down there. You know that the organization has had this game circled on the calendar. Now, that being said, you know, I am the host of Locked On Patriots, so I will go on record and predict a 24-21 New England win. But I will say that if Jacksonville comes out and wins this game, it would not surprise me in the least. And that's because this is, as we've been talking about, an extremely talented defense, a team that was 7-8 minutes from winning the AFC Championship game, and a team that, if Miles Jack was indeed knocked down, maybe does win that AFC Championship game. So I'll make the prediction from a homer-based perspective, but it would not surprise me at all if New England goes into Jacksonville and comes out, you know, a 1-1 team when all is said and done.
And I have to go the exact same route, but for my side, I mean, you're going against the greatest quarterback of all time, maybe the greatest organization of all time. Just the Belichick, the Brady, like the Malkovich commercial. Yep. You got two Goliaths and one David. So I'm going to go to a similar kind of score prediction. I'm saying I'm going to go 21-17 in favor of the Jaguars. I think the defense is going to come out. I hope that the Jags win the toss and defer, because I always love to see the defense come out first. They kind of really set the tone. But the bank is going to be rocking. It's going to be a good time. Folks have been waiting for this game for months. I think if you can get maybe a turnover or something early and just keep the crowd into it, it'll just keep fueling this team all day. But like I said, you're going against one of the greatest the greatest quarterback of all time. I won't say one of. He is the greatest quarterback of all time. It's good. You can't discredit Brady for anything. You have to give it your all for all 60 minutes or however many minutes it takes. I hope it's not a tie like the Steelers and Browns game. But I'll go like you did, a homer approach, but it would not surprise me if this game goes either way, because you are going against a dynasty of a franchise that never seems to want to give up at any moment.
He is Christopher Thornton, the co-host of Locked On Jaguars. Chris, I will turn the microphone over to you here at the end. Let the people know where they can find you, where they can find you work. And I guess, you know, maybe you can be nice and plug your boy, Zach, who wasn't able to join us tonight.
Yeah, so you can find myself, like we said at the beginning of the show, at Misto Cristofo. And if you don't want to even try spelling that out, you can follow our Twitter page at Locked On Jaguars, and my username is in that description. So it's the one that's not Zach_Goodall. Zach is the other host of this show, Locked On Jaguars. He couldn't make it tonight due to technical difficulties, which always seems to come up at the worst possible times. But you can find him and his work. He's constantly putting out stuff. He loves to do this stuff. Zach_Goodall. We do all sorts of pieces at Locked On. We just keep building our staff. We just like to keep pumping out content for you guys to read. Have a real good team coming out or in the works here at Locked On Jaguars. But make sure to follow us at LockedOnJaguars.com. We're on Facebook at Locked On Jaguars, Twitter. And, of course, you guys can know where to find all the shows, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Megaphone, iTunes, all that good stuff for over here at Locked On Jaguars.
Please do follow those guys. They do tremendous work. Zach, Chris, the team they're building over there, just tremendous Jacksonville Jaguars coverage. I don't think there are people that can cover that team better than these guys do. They do tremendous work. If you're a Patriots fan, I know there are fans of other teams that listen to Locked On Pats, definitely give them a follow. That they do great stuff. As for me, Mark Schofield, at Mark Schofield on Twitter, Inside the Pylon, Pro Football Weekly, The Score, Matt Waldman's Rookie Scout and Portfolio, Big Blue View, Steelers Depot. I just write everywhere. It's probably easier to say where I don't write at this point. And I don't write at Locked On Jaguars, so we can put it that way. But for me, for Chris, for Zach, thank you so much for listening to this installment of the Locked On crossover extravaganza between Locked On Patriots and Locked On Jaguars, helping you get ready for this AFC Championship game rematch. Until next time, keep it locked to both Locked On Jaguars and Locked On Patriots.